For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
I appreciate you hearing it. So I've been in a bit of a slump lately. Oh yeah, it hasn't been good.
No, maybe that's why I haven't heard so many bowling stories lately.
Well, this is what's fascinating, and I can't even explain what I'm about to describe to you. So as I've explained to you before, on like a league night, you typically bowl three games, and you're total for three games is used to, like, your three scores added up, you divide that by three, and that's how you get your average that calculates your handicaps and all that sort of stuff. And so a lot of times throughout the night, people will take a look and see how you're doing. They'll see your total up. They'll ask you how many games you're through. And, you know, you can kind of get a gauge on how someone is doing. So through my first two games yesterday, my total added up for the two games was 292. That's abysmal.
For two games, right? So like that's what?
For two games.
145, 146 a game.
Yes.
Okay.
My third game, I shot a 278.
What? So what changed?
That's just it. I don't know, really. Other than I kind of walked away for after the second game. So it was a nightmare, dude. Like I had through two games, the first game I had five splits. I shot a 130 and was just terrible. And second game I shot a 162, and the third game, basically I just started over entirely. Right. Like went back to the ball that I usually start with, went back to my starting position, didn't try to do any like.
And you weren't doing those things previously?
Well, so when you're shooting, as the ball reacts to the lane conditions, you try to adjust how you throw, right? So like if the ball's like, I'm left-handed, so if the ball just sort of sits and spins on the outside and doesn't dive into the pins like I wanted to, then you move left. If it's moving too much, you move right and you try to create more space so that since the ball's being aggressive, you're trying to create more of an angle so that it has more room to sort of dive in without diving across the front of the pins.
And that's more of a lane condition thing, right?
It is. And so at first I was having problems with the ball moving at all. So I switched to my newest bowling ball. It's a little more aggressive. And then I was having trouble kind of the other direction. It was just too aggressive the other way. Then the lane sort of dried out and I wasn't having any luck or success. So I went back to, like I said, I went back to my original ball. And then for that third game, I went nine in a row and was in the 10th frame, three strikes away from a perfect game. It's funny because, you know, it's just like anybody else. They always tell everybody around, you know, don't act like anything's different. Do whatever. Right. And the only time anybody did anything different, which I didn't even see as a big deal, is it was the person to my right who was bowling on the same lane as me. It was both of our turns at the same time. And she was just like, do you want to go first? Do you want me to? And I was like, nah, you go ahead. And so she shot her shot. I get up there. Second I let it go, I was like, nope. And sure enough, I left a makeable split.
Okay.
Left a makeable split, picked up the split, and then finished with a strike. So 10 strikes because I had to shoot two shots in the 10th frame. So, but
right.
Nine in a row, just front nine is as close as I've ever got to a perfect game.
Right.
The closest I'd ever come before was a front eight. But it's still not the best score I've ever
I'll say it's won. Not your best. Highest score. I think you told me
about my highest higher. Score. My highest score is a 280.
Yeah.
And to do that, you throw a strike at the first frame, you go nine spare in the second frame, and then you strike out the rest of the way. So there's that. So, but it's just, it's a funny game. Like, it's yeah. either like probably like any other sport, but, it was just an abysmal night. And that third game, because I've been struggling, my average is down in that league. My average is down to a 187.
Okay.
That third game took my total for the evening up to 570, which when divided by three is a 190 average. So the way it looks in the scorebook, I bowled my average all three games.
Despite bowling a 270, what was it?
292 for two games.
Combined. Right, but what was the third game?
278.
278, okay.
So that took me to a 570, which got me to 190 right. average.
And because of the intricacies of bowling scoring, the 278 was the closest you've ever been to a perfect game, not the 280.
Yes, because of where I
where you got the spare, yeah.
Score-wise, it was not.
Now, if you got the spare in like the fourth frame, would it still be a 280? Or would the score add up differently?
I can't remember what the math is or how it like. It wouldn't have been a 280. It would have been less than that. It would have been less because it's about stacking the strikes on top of it after the opening.
True.
Because that frame becomes 20 pins.
Right.
And
but then you go back to 30 pins.
What's that?
But then don't you go back to 30 pins after that? I don't know.
Right. So, because it's if you go front four, so that's 30 in the first frame, that's 30 in the second frame. What?
I'm just laughing that we're doing this, but keep going.
Then that third frame becomes, let's see, this is 10.
20.
20. And let's say you get a 9.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
So then it goes to 29. Then that spare. Or so then that. Well, no, that's not right. Yeah, no, it is right.
It is right.
Because yeah. And then, because in that strike and the, or that, because it's all about what you did that first ball in the fifth. And then that fourth frame becomes 20. So, and then you start rebuilding after that.
Okay. The intricacies of bowling scoring.
Yeah, if you want to get good at like quick, like if you want to understand common core math, bowling is that it's silly, but it actually is a way to do it because common core addition, subtraction, multiplication is all about groupings.
Right.
And that's basically what you do with math and bowling is it's all about groupings and building on itself.
Which I did that myself since going back to like elementary school. For some reason, I always did math from the front of the numbers to the back and just in my head, like on paper when I had to work it out or whatever, I worked it out the traditional way. But on the chalkboard or whatever, if I would look at something, it would be like the 10,000 plus this, and then add these up. And that's just how I always did it. And so when they started doing it in school, I was like, I kind of felt cheated. Like I thought I was doing something cool. And now that's what they're trying to teach everybody. But, and then I thought, well it's math now too.
Just take it as the compliment that you were doing math in a higher order, more complex way of doing it. Not a more
complex way. But see, to me, that's weird that you say that too, though, because to me, it was not more complex at all. It was way more simple.
No, it's really not. What it does is, though, is it teaches your brain to be more analytical and sort of break things into pieces. Right. And that's not how we teach math, right?
Like, yeah.
Even though that's the way you learn, like we were taught, you know, you're taught your multiplication tables and you're taught to memorize what something is, what you describe and what common core math does is it actually makes you like show it and articulate it. And that's like watching my kid do math and how fast he does math versus how I ever was able to do it. Like he pulls shit out of his head like nothing. And it's funny because he hates math homework now, but he's really good at it. Like he gets all of the A's in the stickers in math. Like he achieves very well.
Like even when I was a kid, like if they busted out like 18 plus 48, I was immediately like, oh, well, that's 50 plus 16. That's 60. Like it was just what I did automatically in my head. So, and that's just for some reason, that's just how it always worked. So who knows?
Can we just look at us and, you know, I don't know if you're recording yet, but this is podcasting right here.
This is absolutely podcasting. Of course I'm recording. I ain't stupid. I knew gold was coming when you said you had a bowling story. So
it's just a fickle game, man.
What's that?
It's just a fickle game, man.
I have a baseball question for you, but it's not the baseball question you expect. And I don't think you're going to know the answer, but I still want to bring it up. So as you know, I was running late. I was coming home and I had the baseball game on the radio. And it didn't strike me that it wasn't the usual Diamondbacks announcer, whose name is Craig Schulte. He wasn't announcing. And I think I heard like the fifth and the sixth inning is when I was tuning in, whatever. And at the end of the sixth inning, the announcer tells everyone that, or maybe it was fifth, I don't know, but basically says, you know, the voice of the Diamondbacks, Craig Schulte, will be taking over, blah, 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 next inning. And I'm like, is that normal for announcers to split up a baseball game?
Yeah, actually, it is not unheard of. I know on the radio, it's not. You'll see, even during, so for playoff baseball, they'll, depending on the affiliate you're listening to,
right?
Like I don't know what
it's the official, it's the local ESPN radio. It's the big 98.7 here in Phoenix. And they
usually that means you're going to get like John Schaube, doing the play by play, or is he with the Cubs now? I can't remember, but like there's usually like their ESPN guy. But like, for example, when the Cardinals make the playoffs, KMOX, which is the Cardinals radio station, like ESPN does their recording, but then KMOX would still have their guys doing the local as well, so that the local guys could do it. And so Dan McLaughlin, for example, before he got fired for drinking too much, he would, while he might not be a part of the ESPN broadcast, he might do two or three innings on the local, or sometimes ESPN will, if it's the local affiliate, like there may be a national broadcast that's doing national radio and then your ESPN affiliate bringing in the local guy as part of their coverage that they get to do because they're in Phoenix.
And that, you know, and now that you talk about it, because Steve Berthume and Tom Brennan, they are the TV announcers for the Diamondbacks.
Right.
Greg Schulte and Darren Sutton, not Darren Sutton. I don't know who the other commentator, maybe it's Rich Waltz. I'm just looking at the list of who they have right now. They do the radio. No, Rich Waltz is TV. I don't know who else does radio. So I wonder if what I heard was Steve Berthume. Maybe they were having the TV guy, since the game is not locally, the game's probably not being shown on Fox.
No, because it's on TBS.
Because it's on TBS, because it's, you know, the LCS game 7. So that makes total sense why they would do that. I guess in my brain, it's just like, well, then you just don't announce and the other guy does. But yeah, I don't know the intricacies of it. But it struck me as odd when I heard someone announce that somebody else was taking over. And I was like, huh, that's not anything that I've ever noticed before. I may have experienced it before and just never realized it. Who knows? But I'll have to ask Derek Montilla, who is working overtime since the Cardinals made the playoffs and now are, you know, possibly going to the World Series. So, yes, that too. Cardinals will not be making the playoffs for a long time. The Diamondbacks are, you know, essentially on the precipice, on the cusp of the World Series, which means Derek has to keep working to cover the Diamondbacks. PHNX Sports.
There are worse things to be doing, man, to be honest. You know what I mean?
Oh, if you look at his social media, dude's having a blast. So.
Oh, yeah. This time is like, I'm jealous.
Exactly. I mean, this is why you do this, right? He gets to do this stuff for a living. It's what he's always wanted to do. He's talked about it before. So good on him for getting to do that, and good on them. So there you go. We've talked about bowling. We've talked about baseball. Maybe now, I don't know, maybe we should talk about wrestling.
Hey, yo.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis. with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
It's Patrick O'Dowd.
You straight punk bitch!
I mean, you're just gonna replace me.
Shut up!
Brandon Morales.
The biggest slut in the Western Hemisphere!
Why do I have to have a buzzer?
And Greg DeMarco.
You are now and will forever be an asshole.
Because it's my show.
And I love you, Greg.
You guys know how to party.
You're welcome.
It is a beautiful Tuesday evening, Tuesday, October 24th. In the show opening, there is a portion of the show opening towards the end where a woman's voice says, "And I love you, Greg." And that is the voice of a former regular on the program, Heather Lynn, who, when we used to tell you to follow her on social media, it was always Heather Lynn 1024. Today is 1024. Guess what that means? It's her birthday. Happy birthday to Heather Lynn. I won't reveal her age, even though she put it in her Instagram post.
I was like, she put it in her socials. It's not for you to do.
Exactly. If people want to go find her on social media and follow up and see her age, they are more than welcome to do so. I am not going to reveal. I will just say that she don't look it. Let's put it that way. So anyway, welcome to the program. You can go follow at Heather Lynn 1024 on all every forms of social media if you want to. You can also go follow Patrick O'Dowd at Wrestling Realist. That's WrestlingRealist. No I in wrestling, but there is one in realist. And there is one in Patrick for the Wrestling Realist, Patrick O'Dowd. You can go follow me at GregDeMarco44. Go follow the website at ChairShotMedia for TheChairShot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
While you're at it, hit up prowrestlingtees.com/the t-shirt. Pick up one of those beautiful chair shot t-shirts. You know what? We have been on the air now for, let's see here, 16, 17 minutes. I'm not going to forget this time. I'm going to do this now.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
We've got a fun list this week. The list is back.
You just made the list.
And we're talking about dead guys and girls, as we will be talking about dead wrestlers on the list this week. Not just the list of dead wrestlers. There is more specifics to it, but we will be talking about that. But before we do that, we do need to talk about the world of professional wrestling. And Patrick O'Dowd, I bring something up almost every week, and I keep bringing it up and bringing it up. And I started to wonder this week, maybe I'm onto something, or maybe I'm just completely wrong. So let me just bring it up. I believe it was last week or maybe the week before where I jokingly said the phrase, LOL Cody appears. Because I feel like everywhere you turn on WWE programming, there is Cody Rhodes. And so I jokingly say they're shoving Cody down our throat. I titled the show about that, about a joke that you made about it a few weeks ago. But I don't know. Like, in your humble opinion, because this week on Raw, opening promo, the Judgment Day, of course, once again, your undisputed WWE Tag Team Champions, Finn Balor and Damian Priest, the show opening promo. Out comes Cody. We exit the promo, not with the Tag Team Championship match for Crown Jewel, but Cody Rhodes going one-on-one with Damian Priest, who was also Senior Money in the Bank at Crown Jewel. And to me, it was reminiscent of Money in the Bank, where I keep telling you, we had to shoehorn in a Cody Rhodes match, which happened to be against Dominic Mysterio, another member of the Judgment Day. And Money in the Bank was an event that felt a little bit like there were too many matches, and I think that was the easiest match to eliminate. But we seem to have Cody Rhodes on everything. So it brings me to the question. Are they shoving Cody Rhodes down our throats, or am I just overreacting when they're doing it with a lot of people?
I don't know that you're overreacting. I think this is indicative of the void that they have for someone other than Cody or Jey Uso to be an A story for the A villains. Because you could also make the argument that the Judgment Day is being shoved down your throat.
Right. And I thought about that too. Right. I was like, well, what about the Judgment Day?
But what this is really indicative to me is just sort of the way the WWE has structured their stories for Raw and for SmackDown. In that A story, as you often hear, you know, our good friend of the program, Eric Bischoff, describe, like that A story doesn't just sort of, it's not a thread throughout the show. It almost is. It's to the point where it's damn near entirely the show. And I do think that's problematic for Raw and SmackDown. Right. Like that there's just so many segments that must involve, we'll use Raw as the example, you know, you talked about Damian Priest. Like, we're going to have Rhea Ripley manipulating five things throughout the episode. Dominic's going to slap somebody in the face and then get slapped in the face. You know, Finn Balor is actually the guy who's sort of like, still here, guys. Hey, I'm still here. I'm Irish. Look at me. I'm around. Like, he's on the outside looking in, and you've got really outside, like, what are your other foils to the Judgment Day? It's Cody Rhodes and it's Jey Uso. Like, and that's kind of it. Seth Rollins is Sami Zayn and Kevin right. Owens, because they seem to show up everywhere, even though,
well, they're, you know, broken up now, but yeah.
What's that?
Kevin Owens is now on SmackDown, so.
But let's call a spade that their rules aren't followed, but, you know. But anyway.
But that's been Sami Zayn's big story now, is that he's no longer right. with Kevin Owens. He's trying to prove himself as a singles guy.
Right.
Blah, 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 which is still interactions with the Judgment. Like, the Judgment Day seems to be feuding with Cody Rhodes, Jey Uso, and Sami Zayn, even though Jey's also feuding with Jimmy, because they keep showing up and messing with each other's stuff. And then there's JD McDonagh running around trying to become a member of the Judgment Day. And that feels, it's like either do it or don't do it. Like, it kind of feels like, well, this taking forever.
But ultimately what you're describing, it, and this is where kind of the bigger problem is. So, you know, we talk about AEW, we talk about, like, there's no, like, it's just not coherent. Like, the stories just aren't there. The thing that I see with the WWE and their problem is that there's just such a big gulf
right.
from the main story to the next stories. Like, you've got what? You've got, like, the Alpha Academy sort of stuff with are they still fucking around with Gunther and...
No, and, now they've kind of actually, they're almost feuding with the New Day all of a sudden. And a right, babyface okay. versus babyface thing. So that seems to be their new interplay. And now they've got Akira Tozawa suddenly running around with the Alpha Academy being their comedic element, even though you have Chad Gable, but he's kind of more serious now. So I guess they wanted to add in a kid.
Right. Well, because he had his comedy. He had his big matches with Gunther. So now, you know, he did the big serious thing.
Right.
It was like the hope spots. Like we had to have three hope spot matches with Chad Gable and Gunther.
And I do feel that I think there's an underlying tone of slowly reestablishing the tag team divisions on both Raw and SmackDown so we can split those titles up eventually.
I think
that's
going
to happen.
But when the attention is so cursory to everything else, like what do you like that's where then things feel like you're being force fed, because you are at the top, because this is what the WWE is like. We know right now Cody Rhodes works. Like he does. Like is he, unless I'm wrong, he's not getting booed yet.
No. Do I believe the fans will turn on him someday? Yes, it has not happened. He is still over.
So they're riding that wave. You know who I feel is the interesting odd man out in sort of these two companies is Seth Rollins, like who is basically like the ultimate plug and play guy. You know, he's got this deal with Shinsuke that he just came out of, and
now it's Drew McIntyre.
It's Drew McIntyre, but like that's a guy who I'm just like, that could be an A story guy, but his carousel of guys that he's up against, I don't know that the audience sees the same way.
It's weird too, because his match with Shinsuke did main event Fastlane, and so
yeah, it was a good match. I watched it.
But it is
it wasn't a great match, but it was
the
good
the
match.
Build with Drew McIntyre, which has only been a few weeks long, has been more of a mid-card feud, seemingly.
Right.
But they haven't. I honestly thought Rollins was going to defend his championship more on television than he has. I really thought that was going to be a thing where you'd see him occasionally in the main event of Raw. That's been more of a thing for Gunther at times, and the tag team titles, which changed hands a couple times over the past few months. So it hasn't been there, and who knows now as we head towards Survivor Series after Crown Jewel and what they're going to do there. There's some speculation about the building set up because they've suddenly started selling all the tickets behind the stage, which makes you think there's not going to be a stage, and yet there's only six rows on one side. You could scoot those down, and now you could fit the two rings in for War Games. Maybe they'll go War Games. Maybe they won't. Who the hell knows?
Oh, Greg, are you trying to speak that into existence? I saw
absolutely.
That tweet, by the way,
absolutely, I am. Right. I'll wing it to that here in a second because I have an idea for War Games I think you might like. But it's just. And you mentioned the Judgment Day, and that's an interesting factor, because if you're a babyface territory, which WWE still is, which Raw is, the babyfaces are still the biggest drawing stars, champions or not, because championships now more than ever are a prop that Triple H is trying to make not a prop, but the Judgment Day are those reliable heels that continue to be there so you can build up your baby faces. If you look at their win-loss records, they're probably terrible. But the company's doing better than ever right now. Ratings are up. Houses are up. Like, everything is on the up. And no one would credit the Judgment Day for it, but you probably should. Like, it's 1,000%.
Like, it's funny that you were like, this is a babyface territory, and the two most powerful draws – in my opinion, in the company are the Judgment Day and the Bloodline.
I don't know if the Judgment Day is a powerful draw or if it's whoever's opposing the Judgment Day.
The desire to see them get beat,
yes,
is a powerful draw. The desire to see Dominic Mysterio, as we talk about him becoming the
he's
going
amazing.
To be this, like, he's defying all odds. Because I swear to God, when this dude first showed up on my television screen,
we were like, it's just not going to happen.
We literally said that ain't it. And yet here I am being like, well, maybe it is it. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely found something, and we're watching him grow into this. But that's being like, yeah, sure. We want to see the baby. We want to see our heroes. We go to a WWE show. But I think that there's just as much a desire to see mommy get pissed. There's just as much a desire to see Dirty Dom get smacked in the face. There's just as much a desire to watch Finn Balor. Hi, I'm Finn Balor. I'm still here. Hey, I'm still here, guys.
Right.
I actually kind of want him out of the Judgment Day at this point. Like, he just feels like he's there.
I actually think he's going to be the one who stays. I think.
Yeah.
I think the end result, I think by the end of the year, the Judgment Day is going to be, I think Priest is going to be out. I think whenever he cashes in, I think Finn's going to cost him. I really do. And maybe JD McDonagh as well. And then the team, like JD McDonagh and Finn Balor, will be in the Judgment Day along with Dominic, along with Rhea Ripley, and Priest will be out. But who knows? Like I've said it before, the demon does not work on a heel Finn Balor. That doesn't mean we need the demon right now, though. The demon can wait.
No, not at all.
And Finn is a phenomenal heel, and he had the match with Seth Rollins, but like you could run a long program with Finn Balor and Seth Rollins. That could be very good, even though they just did it right after.
So to get back to this, like who are the draws? Who's your babyface draw on SmackDown?
Honestly, it's probably Rey Mysterio.
That's a problem.
Is it though? I don't think it is.
Yes.
The LWO is over huge.
Sure. And who are they feuding with?
I don't even remember now. I got to think back and figure out who they're feuding with right now.
That's the problem.
Who the hell are they? There is an answer to that question, too.
They're just not the show.
There is an answer to that question of who they're feuding with. And well, now Ray's getting ready to drop title to Logan Paul at
that
Crown Jewel.
Yes, that's true. But that's the problem, right? Like,
but also, babyface territory. I'm completely stupid. The answer to that question wasn't Ray. It's LA Knight. He's your top draw.
Yeah.
Top babyface draw.
Yeah, him and John Cena until the actors.
But here's the thing. There was a talk about a WWE house show over the weekend in Laredo, Texas. That was their lowest drawing house show in a while. LA Knight versus Solo Sikoa was on top. So, and then right under that was Charlotte Flair, Io Sky, and it was either Bianca Belair or Asuka. I can't remember who the third was. But yeah, it's very interesting. SmackDown, because it's on Fox, the draw to SmackDown is SmackDown. Like it's presented in such a way that this is just the show to watch. And poof, we watch it and people come out in droves. So it will be interesting when SmackDown returns to cable to see how the storytelling element of SmackDown changes and where Raw goes. And depending on the network that Raw ends up on, do we shift a bloodline over to Raw? Like what happens then? So it's going to be very, very interesting. But I wanted to go back to when you were talking about the Judgment Day. Everyone wants to see Dominic get the shit kicked out of him. We know that. And people,
which is amazing.
And people definitely want to boo Damian Priest and Finn Balor. On Raw, they did a contract signing, and I thought it was very well done. They did a contract signing for the Women's Championship match at Crown Jewel, which is a five-way. And Adam Pearce was rushing the challengers out. Get him to sign, get him to sign, get him to sign. Because every time they're all together, a big brawl ensues. So he wanted to prevent the brawl from happening. So he had the four challengers sign, and then he was just like, I'm going to get Rhea Ripley's signature later. We're done here. And the crowd was pissed. And then Rhea Ripley's music hit, and they popped. And Rhea Ripley's been getting pops from the crowd. Like, I do think the crowd wants to cheer her. And I think now that Becky Lynch has lost the NXT championship, spoiler alert.
Yep.
I definitely think we're on a straight and narrow towards Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley, night one main event WrestleMania. Like, I think that's where we're headed to. I think Rhea Ripley's going to come out of that match completely babyface just because of the crowd. Because it's the theory with Edge, it's the theory with Kevin Owens, it's a theory with so many other heels. Sometimes heels are so damn good at being heels, people just start to like them. And that's just what happens.
She's very good at her.
It happened to us in IZW 2020. We had a team we thought were heels. They cheated to win a match. A crowd popped, and I was like, they're baby faces. And they're baby faces now. So it's just the crowd is going to go. And I just think Rhea Ripley is such a damn good performer. And that's the crazy thing. We've always talked about the crowd, the people are eventually going to turn on Cody Rhodes. they're also eventually going to turn around on Dominic Mysterio. At some point, they will love Dom again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because they will still really boo him. Dom when he was they baby. Will boo him out of love. It'll be the craziest thing. It'll be the craziest thing.
I think they're already, I think some are already booing him out.
Oh, yes. They really absolutely do. Are. They're booing Dom because it's the thing to do. It's just
right.
Just like they how they booed John Cena and Roman Reigns. Again, go back and watch. When that music hit, by the time
Yabba-Doo
happened on John's, like the John Cena music hits, it was a pop from the crowd that quickly became boos. And I firmly believe the boos were piped in. Roman Reigns, the music would hit. It was a pop from the crowd and then turned to boos. And I think those boos were piped in as well. I stand firm on my thing that Dominic Mysterio's microphone is turned down a little bit when he cuts his promos, because when he was promoing on Raw, somebody else's mic was also turned down when they started talking. You could tell. So I think there's that. I like some of the intricate storytelling, like Rhea's talking with all these different people backstage, but some of it just to me does seem to take a little too long.
Right.
And I don't know, but maybe it'll be worth it when it happens. I don't know. Like if JD McDonagh eventually joins the Judgment Day, I don't think anybody's going to care when they would have cared a month ago.
Yeah. I sit there when I think about Raw, you've got this 3-hour show and what do people pull out of it week after week after week after week?
That's the weird thing about Raw is that, yes, you have to build. You also got to fill 3 hours.
Right. That's a long-ass time. But what are you filling those 3 hours with?
Triple H is he's filling it with more wrestling.
That's true.
Yeah, I haven't seen the articles that used to cover the time of matches or whatever, but I guarantee you if we did a comparison to a year ago, the total match length on Raw is longer now than it was a year ago. That's just my gut instinct. I don't know.
I would say that makes sense because you see a ton of not just like longer match. Like now that they do these commercial breaks where they don't cut away from the action and they just put the commercial break in the corner, like you're seeing 30-some minute matches, but like from entrances to finish.
Yes.
The segment, that portion of the show,
it covers multiple segments, but yeah, it can total 30 minutes.
I can see that.
Very interesting.
I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting to me.
Cause there are, and they're also building on Raw. They build from week to week very well. There's 4 matches announced for next week's Raw that were all set up through this week's Raw, like Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano versus Imperium. That was set up on this week's Raw. Seth Rollins versus JD McDonagh was set up on this week's Raw. You've got, I can't even remember now. There were 2 other ones that were set up next week on this week's Raw that are escaping me now. And I feel stupid. But they definitely are there. Cody didn't wrestle this week on Raw either. He just came out twice. So to go back to the original question. So it is, and of course Raw next week, it's people are going to talk about how horrible it was because it's not going to do so well in the ratings because it's fucking Halloween. So is next Monday Halloween or is it Tuesday? I might be wrong.
It's next Tuesday.
Okay, never mind then. We'll all be fine.
Because we are recording on Tuesday. It's the 24th. That's right. It's 24th. 7 days from 10, today will be the 31st. So
happy birthday, Heather Lynn. So yeah, it's all good. But yeah, it's very interesting. You are right though. Like it would be a hell of a job to have. And don't get me wrong, it's still my dream job to have to put these things together, and it'll never happen. But I can only imagine the undertaking that it is to book Raw from week to week. God, imagine if it was still like not a brand split and you had to book 5 hours of television every week. Like, cause they're not really booking 5 hours of television every week. They're booking 3 hours of television every week and they're booking 2 hours of television every week. And they're doing so separately. And they probably have separate writing teams. I don't know all the intricacies right now. I could ask and probably find out, but,
I do like some of the changes and just little things. Like we talked about Nick Aldis.
Love Nick
Aldis. Coming to SmackDown.
He's literally.
We are immediately doing a conflict between the SmackDown and Raw general managers.
And we're slowly getting towards Pierce being the babyface version and Aldis being the heel version.
Well, it was just kind of funny because all this did the heel thing,
right?
Where he wasn't wrong, but everybody just hates it.
Because he kicks wrong. Pierce out of SmackDown,
right?
When Pierce is just there trying to get Jay out, but then Aldis shows up on Raw. We don't really know why, and Pierce says, "I would like you to stay." So it's like he's you know doing the olive branch, doing all of that. I will say this. Especially, we talked last week about how Nick Aldis is 36 years old. He's literally younger than like Roman Reigns, both Usos, Sami Zayn, all these people.
Right.
This ends with Nick Aldis, comma WWE superstar, in my opinion. Maybe sooner than later, because here's the deal. I talked about trying to speak Survivor Series into existence, and I'm not trying to speak this into War Games existence because I don't think it's gonna be War Games. But if we do get a Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, and they build their teams up over a week or two. I could see Aldis building up his team of five to have four, and then the fifth member is Nick Aldis.
Yeah.
And that's right. His way of getting back in the ring. Some people think we could get to Pierce versus Aldis. Yes, I think Pierce could still go, but like, does he want to? Would he? And if he'd have to lose.
He hasn't worked a real match.
Since like 2016 or something like that, right. 2014. It's been a long time. But Aldis can still go. I just think this was their way of getting Aldis back in the fold. We talked about last week until they can get him slotted in as a wrestler. And this is probably like, okay, we could start you off from zero, or we can start you off from GM, and you're already this further, this far ahead after 1 week. So I am very interested to see where that goes, but I think it ends with Nick Aldis in the ring for WWE. Can I tell you my War Games pitch?
Yeah, pitch me your War Games pitch.
So we've had
hold up. Oh, you lost it, didn't you? You lost.
Where did I lose?
I was like, you can't pitch the War Game. You can't
I don't have
the
it
War
right
Games
now.
Without
yeah.
without.
I don't have
William Regal saying War Games.
Two different days, I have brought the computer upstairs with me to work, hoping that I can put some sound bites together. But work has been absurdly insane lately, so I don't have.
That's
any
disappointing.
Yet. I'm sorry. We'll be sorry. Okay. We'll be all right. But here's my pitch for War Games. We've seen the NWA, the classic Blood and Guts War Games. I guess Blood and Guts not the right term since thanks to AEW. Transition into like this fall classic where there weren't really always feuds involved, but they were still the match. We saw it brought back in NXT where it was used for feuds. We introduced women's War Games. The last NXT War Games was really Old Guard versus New Guard. We then brought it to the main roster where we had women's one where we kind of shoehorned some different members in because we needed to get to teams of five. Of course, we had the Bloodline versus the Brawling Brutes and Drew McIntyre, and I can't remember who else. Oh, Kevin Owens team with them as well. So we had all of that. So a lot of things have been done with War Games. There's one thing that has not been done with War Games, in my opinion, that the WWE can do. Or if it has happened, it hasn't happened in WWE, but I don't think it happened in WCW. We have never had teams in War Games that comprised of both men and women.
It's true.
And it doesn't, we've always said you could get anybody over and anybody in position in WWE in 2 weeks to do anything. We've got the Judgment Day on Raw, which has four members, one of which being a woman. And we've got the OC on SmackDown, which has four members, one of which being a woman, Mia Yim. I don't see why we don't build to a 4-on-4 War Games, and maybe we add a fifth member each team. Who knows? But like, and you could even work out the order to where it makes sense for when the women enter. And for the first time ever, we can have a mixed/intergender War Games. That would be fully believable. They could pull it off. They could do great things with it. That's my pitch for War Games. Do you have to get there? Yes. Can you get there? I believe you can. Because it wouldn't take much for Nick Aldis to motivate the OC to go do something. Because they're not even being used that much. So Aldis, they could go to Aldis and complain and be like, yo, where's our opportunity, Mr. Commissioner? Like, AJ and Aldis have history. So they could even play off on that. And Aldis could be like, I got an idea for you. Talk about it privately. They show up on Raw the next Monday, and then next thing you know, we're off to the races. We've got ourselves a War Games match. We still can't bust out William Regal yet because his year isn't up, but we'll get there next year. So that's my pitch for War Games.
I mean, it's a good pitch.
Because I just, I don't want war games to just be brand versus brand. I feel like I'm cool with brand versus brand Survivor Series, but I just think war games needs, it would still be brand versus brand, right? You'd still have a Raw team and a SmackDown
war games
team.
War games is supposed to be, one, I know it's special to you in general, but
yes,
like war games is supposed to feel like the end of something.
Right.
And literally the SmackDown versus Raw thing can never end. I think that the quote unquote traditional Survivor Series match between Raw and SmackDown is a fun, friendly, not so friendly competition way to go about that whole deal. War Games to me has always felt and is supposed to feel personal. It's supposed to be, like I said, it's supposed to be a feud finisher.
Right.
And that's not a feud you can finish.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And that's why I think if it was a feud between the Judgment Day and the OC, right, it could work. It would be a long feud. It'd be a short feud.
No, it doesn't have to. It could last through War Games.
Exactly. And maybe, you know, a show or two after where you have some, because you could easily have, you know, you got all the members. You could do different matches.
Whatchamacallits before the Royal Rumble and then, you know, I'm sure Fastlane is in there somewhere, right? Like, is it Fastlane
just
always
happened? But yeah, they moved Fastlane. Fastlane just happened, so it wouldn't be Fastlane.
You know what I mean, though? Like,
yeah, they'll put something in there. I don't know. Well, NXT has a December PLE with Deadline, so I don't think there's going to be a WWE
one. Names. All of their pay per view names, I just don't care for anymore. They sound like seventh grade science project, right, you know, names or creative writing.
Well, the NXT Deadline thing makes sense because they do this, like, the Iron Survivor Challenge match or whatever. But and they've been smart. The NXT one's in Hartford, Connecticut, or Bridgeport, Connecticut, or somewhere Connecticut. Like they're being smart with their locations for the NXT ones, so they can draw well.
Dude, you know what? You know what I just thought of as a good idea for the list.
What's that?
Like non-WWE pay-per-view names that were like just bank.
I love wrestling event names. So I would always
be and I think we'd have to pick the rule. You got to like basically cut out any WCW name because like can't use Halloween Havoc. Sorry, WWE.
Well, they've taken over so many. Yeah, but I would
Stargate.
Want.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think we take WCW out of it as well.
Because you know it's an underrated. I'll just say this, not an underrated, but for as many problems as that company has endured and survived and changed its name a dozen times, Bound for Glory is a good pay-per-view name.
It is.
It's a really, actually, they had some pretty good,
they've had some great, some pretty good Hard Justice, Hard to Kill, I love Destination X. Like
Destination X.
They had some good pay-per-view names, and hopefully, remember, TNA's back.
It is back, baby.
TNA's back starting in January.
All we need is Jeff Jarrett's music to hit for the first episode and everything.
I know. Like how long is his deal with AEW?
I don't know. He's working more matches than anybody else. Though,
I
apparently,
know. I was shocked by that stat when I shared it with you guys. I was like, holy crap. More
good on the 700-year-old Jeff Jarrett.
Right? He's a worker. He's always been, and, you know. Christopher Platt always said the greatest worker ever. By the way, D-backs 4-2 lead into the bottom of the ninth.
One out.
Right? Oh, is it on my phone? I just got on my phone. So, yeah, good luck. Good luck there. So, no, you're right. Bound for Glory, great name. Ring of Honor, a lot of great names. I literally, one of my favorite things, you know, if you didn't know, Greg's a wrestling promoter. I love naming our events. I really do. And I try to even shy away. We have one event that has the same name every year, Monster, which is our Royal Rumble show. And I labored over that, going up with different names for it until that one hit me. I'm a bit like both, you know, Navajo Warrior and myself love a lot of classic music. People don't even know how many events that we've had that have been named after Kiss songs or albums because he's a huge Kiss fan. Monster, in fact, is a Kiss album, but that's not why I picked the name. I've named other events. We had a Wanted Dead or Alive. Could be a lot of things, but it's definitely the Bon Jovi song. I fully intend to have a Kickstart My Heart next year as an event name. That's actually the opening song to our events. So we have the old school ICW song.
Out, yeah.
We have the old school IZW song that used to be played, but it's kind of a slow, laid back song. And to me, that didn't exude excitement.
It doesn't. Yeah. You want to pump the crowd. Like,
right. Basically, I'd have to look at the times. I guess I can have it, 'cause I have the foo bar open right here. But we start with, geez, where are the times? Where are we? I don't want to. So the IZW song is 3:38 and Kickstart My Heart is 4:43. When we hit the 5 minute warning, we go into the IZW song, and then that goes right into Kickstart My Heart. And that's when the announcer gets in the ring and all that too. So right at that, you know, we don't finish Kickstart My Heart, but we get through. So that's,
you got to build that anticipation.
And it really adds right up to the 5 minutes. So see, it's all out
of way for the Diamondbacks too.
Oh, look at that. Let's go. I think at this point, it's not a bold prediction to say they're going to go, but good on them. I said that good on them. It's not over yet. But yeah, and music, of course, running these things, literally one of the most important parts of any wrestling show. It's insane. But God, we've been all over the place again. It's going to suck.
Best shows don't have an agenda.
Yeah, we do good stuff and we don't have an agenda. All right, we're going to go to commercial. We're going to come back, do a list.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out TheChairShot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, TheChairShot.com.
Acknowledge me.
You just made the list.
It is time to do the list for this week. Patrick O'Dowd has me intrigued now by his list idea that he shared earlier. We're going to have to do that one with the show names, because like we talked about, I love me some wrestling show names. It's a big part of what I have to do. But we are talking about dead wrestlers this week. It's not just a list of dead wrestlers, although we could do that. Maybe we'd find a more respectful title for it than just dead wrestlers, but I think it would be okay. These are dead wrestlers that we'd love to see in action today. That's what we are talking about with this week's list. Now, we're trying to avoid current or recently departed wrestlers. Like, a lot of people would be like Bray Wyatt.
Right.
Because he just passed away. But we've seen Bray Wyatt today. We saw Bray Wyatt as recently as January. So that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about dead wrestlers from a different era that we'd like to see in action against the talent of today. Is what we are talking about. So,
and I even tried to restrict it. Like,
how did you restrict it?
Well, because there's at least two names. Actually, I can think of three names that I could see a lot of people being like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
That we actually saw wrestle when we were younger, like in our,
oh, yeah,
you know, like,
I think that's probably going to be my entire list. Teens,
like into college age, and I intentionally left those names off.
I'm probably going to say them, so it doesn't matter.
What?
I'm probably going to say them, so it doesn't really matter.
Probably.
Yeah.
But
it depends. I have some on my list that I haven't fully decided which three I'm going to use off of my list either. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. So we have not done a list in the past few weeks, so just to make sure everybody knows how we do this, I came up with a list of dead wrestlers we'd like to see in action today. So Patrick O'Dowd will go first. He will put somebody on the list. Then I will go. Then he will go. I will go. And we'll take turns till we get our six. Then we will flip it. I will go first, and we will put the six in order. And that will be our list. This is not a top six list. We could do this list again in a month. It might be completely different. This is just the list. And this week's the list.
You just made the list.
Dead wrestlers that we would love to see in action today. Patrick O'Dowd, you get to go first. Who is your dead wrestler? I got to come up with a better phrase, but now it just rolls off the tongue.
I mean, I'm just going to get it out of the way, because the man transcends all eras and is the greatest wrestler in the history of ever. And I've only really watched him in archived footage, because by the time I actually saw him in the early 80s, before he stopped wrestling, he was well past the prime of what he was in the 70s when he was amazing with his boy Bobby Heenan, and that character would be massive today, in my opinion, regardless of my personal feelings about one Nick Bockwinkel. Like, that dude That dude is a character. Plug and play any era of wrestling right. you've ever been in. It's going to work. And he was so smooth in the ring. People like AEW fans would love him because he's a technician. WWE fans would love him because he could be a sports entertainer with that, you know, oozing class. And, you know, he was just amazing. Nick Bockwinkel, got to put him on.
Absolutely.
Can't not put him on.
Would have been shocked if you didn't put him on. So
absolutely.
100% expected Nick Bockwinkel to be on your list. You know, what's funny is that the first name that I thought about on this list, I then had to realize, like, I was, oh, this was perfect, all the magic, blah, blah, and then I realized he's not dead. So I couldn't put Magnum TA on the list.
Who was that?
It was Magnum TA. Taken from the world of wrestling far too soon, but not from the world of the world, as he's still alive. So, yeah, that would not have been good if I just randomly killed off Magnum TA in the making of this list. That would not have been good. It's so hard because of the different names and all the, and yes, this is someone that we saw, which was not a rule. I do think it's a different era when this person wrestled, and that was kind of the rule that we talked about in our exchange coming up with the list. But I would love to see this person and this character today. And it has nothing to do with the fact that his son just debuted on NXT today in the ring anyway. And that is, of course, Brian Pillman. I would love to see. Could you imagine a feud with Brian Pillman and Seth Rollins? Like, that would just be amazing. Like, the exchange they could have with the production values of today. I think some of the promos that Brian Pillman could do would be amazing. Back in the Thunderdome era, with the cinematic matches, I think Pillman could have been amazing in that setting. And there's a lot of stuff he could have done. So my first addition to the list is Brian Pillman.
You know, there's an argument to be made that you can't just have sort of that pure babyface wrestler in wrestling anymore. And I disagree with it to an extent. I think that it is a character that can still work when done well. I think that we talk about wrestlers who were taken too soon. Tragically, this wrestler died under very suspect circumstances, but was believed to be one of the next big things in the NWA before he died, and was the first of many tragic deaths in the Von Erich family. As David Von Erich, who, if you've ever watched him wrestle in World Class, was the most talented, in my opinion, of the Von Erich brothers. And you know, of course, he had that Von Erich, like, good old heroic boy babyface thing, that white bee babyface. I think he had the charisma and the personality to pull off. He could pull it off today. And so David Von Erich is my second choice.
See, when I started watching the old World Class episodes on ESPN, it was after having been introduced to Kerry Von Erich. And so to me, Kerry was always the guy. And so I don't know that I was ever able to watch David with like a clean palate, so to speak.
You're so good.
Yeah. Oh no, it definitely was. And David Von Erich is one that absolutely belongs on the list and a great choice and would have been hell of a baby face. Were the Von Erichs ever really heels? Like
never.
Even outside of World Class. I don't think they heels. I don't even think they were heels outside of World Class.
No, they were very well protected.
They had some runs in New York and in Portland.
Which
and
is
elsewhere,
hilarious because Fritz was a dick.
Oh, yeah. He was completely a heel. He was completely a heel and not at all Von Erich. So, yeah, that's
right.
Interesting. Great additions to the list. I really do love those. I am actually staying where you are for my selection. Except I am going to the other side. This person was both a babyface and a heel, but they are far more remembered as a heel. And I think could have been one of the biggest heels in the history of professional wrestling had they not passed away. Also under suspect circumstances. And that is Gino Hernandez. Gino Hernandez, who I learned more about, again, watching the old reruns of World Class and then the YouTube and everything. Because of the role that Bruce Pritchard played with Houston Wrestling, he's talked about Gino Hernandez a ton on his podcast, and it comes up a lot. especially if you listen to the older ones. But to me, I think that he was a star that could have soared to amazing heights and just never got that opportunity. So to me, Gino Hernandez is one and could be a candidate for number one, in my opinion.
Sure. I mean, it's hard to all four of these guys are like, this is gonna be
that's
a
true.
Tough list
you're exactly
like,
right.
actually put numbers to next to.
You can't go wrong with any of these so far. Haven't had the Bashams yet that Patrick O'Dowd would put on the list.
That
so.
Was a great pick. Fuck off. I love it. I'm proud of it. I'm going to stand by it.
You should. It's your list.
You know, when the inspiration hits, and oddly enough, the Bashams were the inspiration for that list.
Good for them.
All right. So I'm going even further back for my last choice as I dipped deep into the old school. There's a lot of argument out there as to who the originator of the gimmick was.
I'm intrigued.
But there's nobody more cited than Gorgeous George. And I mean, when people like Muhammad Ali speak about the influence that the dude has. Now that character would need some tweaking in today's audience, but would it need that much tweaking in today's audience? I don't think it would. And I think it would still work and it would be a fucking heat magnet.
I mean,
and then it would be over and then people would love it and it would be great.
To me, in my opinion, you tweak Gorgeous George and you have Pretty Deadly.
Right.
In a lot of ways. And they have not toned down what they do. The gay undertones of what Pretty Deadly does is amazing. And they take it even further on social media. Like the stuff they do on social media is amazing and hilarious. And the hotel room pictures of them with strategically placed bananas is perfect.
Right. Just the majority of any quote unquote flamboyant heel persona, a lot of it can be attributed to Gorgeous George.
Most of what we see on television today can be attributed to Gorgeous George because he was that first character. I think he was the first wrestler to have theme music. I could be wrong, but there's so many things that
came
out
like pomp and circumstance, right? Didn't he just like Savage?
I think so. Like people don't realize, like you could almost go from Gorgeous
get
George.
Get your filthy hands off of me.
Like Dusty Rhodes was heavily influenced by Gorgeous George, who then heavily influenced Ric Flair, who heavily influenced an entire generation of wrestlers. Like he also influenced superstar Billy Graham, who influenced Hulk Hogan, who influenced a generation. Like you could almost trace so much of what we see on television today back to Gorgeous George, and he does not get the credit at all.
It's a shame. Yeah. It's one of those things you go back and you watch again, just watch old wrestling people, watch some of this stuff because you will see so much of what you love today. Like you were talking about Pretty Deadly. Hell, even the ridiculousness of Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Even if he's not going to claim it, like that Gorgeous George did it first.
There's so much. Yeah, it's. I mean, such an amazing performer.
He was such a celebrity too. He was huge back in the day. Anyway, okay.
He was like how people talk about Ric Flair today, like in mainstream media,
right?
Like being in rap songs and stuff like that. Like it just that was Gorgeous George back then. So yeah, he would be huge and another candidate. Like you said, they're all candidates for number one on the list. So I started with somebody in the Attitude Era. And I'm going back to the Attitude Era for another dead wrestler. But given the rise over the past probably 7 years now of women's wrestling and the way that women's wrestling has been categorized and the athleticism and physicality involved in women's wrestling with wrestlers like Rhea Ripley, Charlotte Flair, Raquel Rodriguez, and the likes of a Tiffany Stratton in NXT, imagine if China came up today. And didn't have to be treated as the ninth wonder of the world, as somewhat of a freak show because of how she was compared to women, ended up having to wrestle men, and then went back and wrestled women after that, and it didn't really fit because she had already – she won a women's championship after being intercontinental champion or European champion, so it just didn't make a whole ton of sense. But imagine if she came up today and went through the NXT and had the feuds with Charlotte's and Bayley's and so many others. Like, China would be amazing. It could be a huge mainstream star for all the right reasons. And so I am going to put China on the list of dead wrestlers.
You just made the list.
So now, Patrick, go down. Comes a bigger challenge. We've had some tough lists to put in order, but this might be the hardest list that we've ever had to put in order. We've got Nick Bockwinkel, Brian Pillman, David Von Erich, Gino Hernandez, Gorgeous George, and China. And now we've got to put this list in order, and it is very, very difficult. So I get to go first, and then Patrick will go second. We'll take turns. I am going to do what I said earlier. I mean, I could pick a number out of a hat and nobody could complain over who I chose to be number one on the list. But I am going to go with, to me, the biggest what if of the entire list of what they would have looked like in the mainstream world of wrestling today. And that is Gino Hernandez. I will make him number one. Patrick O'Dowd, you get number two.
And for my number two, I'm going to go with the most influential name on the list, in my opinion. I'm going to go with Gorgeous George.
I figured you were between two, and that's the one that I actually thought you were going to go with. So I will take that one there. For me, selfishly, as much as I want to see what his son accomplishes, I can't get – there's so many pairings you could do with Brian Pillman today, so I'm going to put Brian Pillman number three on the list.
That is fair. What do I do now? I can't let him go past four. It's got to be Nick. Like, you know, right. And again,
you can't go wrong with any of them. It doesn't.
It's, right. And yes, again, we didn't really talk much about his influence. He was just talking. I just gushed about how nuts I am for him, but very much the same sort of argument. Like, he was influential and he'd be over today. So to you, sir.
Absolutely. Between the two, it is tough. I am going to give the nod to the lone woman on the list and envision China in the ring with the Charlotte Flairs and Rhea Ripley's of today and put China number five.
You know what's really interesting? Is this the first time where we've only picked our picks?
It probably is. I have to go back and look at the prior lists that are in my notebook here, but it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, because usually one of us flips on one of them, but not today.
Well, because usually one of us, it's rare that we pick somebody who the other one wasn't like, oh, yeah, I had that person. Like,
I picked the Bashams, for example. So
right.
Sometimes you don't have a choice.
We don't have, and occasionally I will put somebody on the list at number six that is definitely going to stay at number six as well. And that hasn't happened this week either, so.
Right, that was but David Von Erich, who was the second name that I put out there, will be the final name on the list. And again, I think if anybody could pull off that, you know, white meat baby face, David Von Erich could be that guy.
I actually just made it to the list with the Bashams on it, as that was a top eight list too, by the way. So,
because we went, was that tag? Was that brothers?
Was wrestling siblings.
And we went eight because we broke some rules or something. Like, I think we argued for it or something like that.
We did 12 the day of your birthday. I think that the eight, I think it was just a time thing. I don't know why we went eight. I have no idea. Okay. I'm looking at the list now, and you've got like Brett and Owen, the Bellas, Edge and Christian, Jimmy and Jay, Kane and the Undertaker, the Von Erichs, the Wild Samoans, and the Bashams.
So. Hell yeah. Yeah. We got the Bashams.
All right, so number six, David Von Erich. There we go.
You just made the list.
Congratulations. Number one, Gino Hernandez. Number two, Gorgeous George. Number three, Brian Pillman. Number four, Nick Bockwinkel. Number five, China. And number six, David Von Erich.
You just made the list.
Dead wrestlers who we would love to see in action today.
All right, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. The clock is ticking, and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes, and we're out.
We talked about it earlier. It came up, and I was going to save it for the three-minute warning, but it did kind of come out. But let's talk about it briefly. Like we said, before this past Saturday night, I never thought we would utter the words, TNA is back, And we've had so many conversations over the last like 12 years of podcasting about TNA wrestling and that P word potential that was applied to them. So many, and how I graded them differently than WWE because of what they had, each company had the potential to do because of the landscape within that, that they promoted. And Impact Wrestling at the end of Bound for Glory played a video, about this random treasure box with like eight or so wrestlers. And a lot of it was led by Frankie Kazarian, but you also had Eric Young, you had Jordan Grace, you had Josh Alexander, Alex Shelley, Chris Sabin, and so many more that were there cutting the different promos. And at the end of the promo, poof, there it was, the return of TNA wrestling. And they did this once before. They did like a one-off event as TNA around a WrestleMania weekend, I believe. But starting with their January Hard to Kill pay-per-view, they are fully rebranding from Impact Wrestling back over to TNA. And I've seen people facepalm. I've seen people love it. It's definitely a polarizing decision to make. What say you, Patrick O'Dowd, about Impact Wrestling rebranding or retro branding itself back to TNA?
That my first, if you're facepalming whatever you were calling it, TNA, nobody ever really clung to the name Impact Wrestling, in my opinion, the way like people still were calling it TNA to this day. So stop with the facepalm, like whatever. It's the more recognizable brand of what they've had between the two. Now, it doesn't move the needle and suddenly create more eyeballs on the product. Probably not. But we've been talking about this company for a while now, and say what you will about their reach and their talent and their audience, they're a steady Eddie show. And they, in my opinion, put out some of the most reliable wrestling content for me to be sports entertained and not walk away from a program being angry about it. They arguably have the best women's wrestler in the business right now, working for them. They put on it. They know who they are. They know what they are. And they put on a good show. And I think Scott D'Amore has been terrific for that company. And I think you've seen it. You've seen what he can do. And I trust his leadership for them to make any sort of decision like that. And no, there will not be six sides to the ring. AJ Styles will not have to argue on podcasts that they're different because their ring has six sides. This is just, to me, it's a comfortable shift that was what people were still calling Impact Wrestling anyway. Like, we were still calling Impact Wrestling TNA. So just embrace it.
It's so funny too, because I guarantee you can go back in time, find episodes of this program where you and I were like, get rid of the TNA name.
Oh, I'm sure.
And hindsight is definitely 2020. In fact, I was, and I'm not trying to claim clairvoyance or take credit or whatever, the name I suggested was Impact Wrestling solely because that was the name of the television program. Obviously, that was just more of a common sense thing than a brilliant idea, because that's what they ended up doing. And it was a logical transition to make. Because when it first started, the name TNA was associated with tits and ass. I mean, there was a tag team in WWE called TNA. They were named that because right. They were managed by Trish Stratus. Like, that's just the way it was. But over time, and it was weird because, and Miranda always loves to say, when she does a Miranda show, I can't miss you if you never leave. And I feel like when they dumped the name TNA, that brought out the actual love for the name. Like, I think for the name to actually be beloved and possibly move the needle, it had to go away. And I think they picked, I always say, you know, when CM Punk turned heel and attacked The Rock back in, you know, leading up to WrestleMania 29 or whatever, no one expected him to turn heel. And that was the best time to do it, when right. No one expects it. Nobody was clamoring for him to change the name back to TNA. And that was the best time. And it's kind of like the problem with WWE storytelling today. They wait so long to do things that everybody's like, yeah, of course you just did that. Sometimes you got to do things that are surprises. Do I think it'll move the needle? I don't know. Nostalgia is huge. We all know that. Like, in branding, yeah, in logo making, everything, nostalgia is huge. I will say this. It won't hurt the needle, in my opinion.
No,
it will not take away from what they're currently doing. I think it could help. it's weird because they have, we always talk about identity, like this company has no identity. This, you know, AEW, like, who did they even know what they are right now? Like, we've asked that question before. TNA, I think from in-ring perspective, how they produce, everything had an identity except the branding. Like, it's always the same. They've had the same stage for like 7 years and it's very generic looking. They keep changing the color of the ring ropes. Like, believe it or not, that's actually a big part of your branding. Like, it just is. And I feel like going back to the TNA branding, it was yellow, it was red and gold like it used to be. Like, I just feel like they've already produced videos that they showed the video of PCO signing with TNA. He's the first wrestler to sign with TNA. His Impact deal was up. And you have the TNA logo in the corner. Like, even though it doesn't start till January, they're already starting to infuse that in there. Is this the beginning of some weird TNA versus Impact Wrestling angle? Probably not, but I do think you have to ask the question because you just never know in wrestling these days. I just think it's more of a branding. It's throwing a dart, I think, but it's like, when you go up to the plate and you're swinging for a home run, it's easier to swing for a home run if you know you are guaranteed a single, no matter what happens.
Right.
And to me, that's what they did. It's like, a lot of times you have to ask the question, why? Why do that? Why do that? Why not do that? Like, it just can't hurt, in my opinion. If it doesn't lead to anything, oh well. If it does lead to something, then great. Good on them.
Bonus. So, it's exactly. It's truly a bonus. Last thought before we go into our getting on here. How interesting of a time for wrestling fans is it right now when you consider what could be available for your television screens in the coming year, between whatever you want to make of Billy Corgan and his NWA and his CW deal and his territory thing. Like, you say what you will, it's made a little bit of news. Now, will it really turn into anything? Probably not, because if you're on a CW cable outfit, you could be on at 4 a.m. You could be on at 3 p.m. on a Tuesday. You just never quite know.
Is it going to be a local market thing like Ring of Honor was?
Right.
I have a lot of questions about that.
But you get that. You've got TNA, you know, making some sort of push and a change and a shift towards next year. You still have AEW. You still have the WWE. Both of them are as profitable as wrestling has ever been. More profitable if you look at like just sheer numbers and all of that. Plus, you can still catch things like Women of Wrestling. You can still catch New Japan. Like, there's just so many opportunities that don't require you to have too much work to do to see more wrestling and different wrestling. Like, the big preach that you hear from folks is, I want something different. I want to see what the WWE does. Well, now you have the WWE, you have what AEW puts out there. You have what Impact puts out there. You have reruns of New Japan out there that follows Impact. You possibly will have this NWA. Like, there's just, it's good opportunity. It's good stuff. OVW, you know, I can find OVW on TV on my satellite provider.
Can you? That's nice.
Yeah.
It's interesting. If not for the whole Billy Corgan TNA Impact Wrestling issue, I don't know why Anthem wouldn't want to sign them up to be on AXS. Like, it just, you know, New Japan like was on there and now it's more the reruns. Like, I think that's something that there's a lot of opportunity that Anthem had that I think they missed because of their commitment to Impact Wrestling / TNA that they still could have maintained. But yeah, it's a crazy time. We're like the luckiest generation ever, being Gen Xers. Like, we've lived literally from 8-track up to, you know, streaming. And in wrestling too, like, we literally started in the rock and wrestling era. And now, you know, here we are in this age of everything being digital, like this digital wrestling age. Like, it's just crazy what we, and we're not even that old if you really think about it. So yeah, we've lived through a ton and got a ton more to come. God, who knows? Who knows what we'll see in the future? But again, never thought we'd see the return of TNA, and yet, you know,
here we are
headed towards January where TNA is going to come back. I hope it I don't know what results they desire out of it, but I hope they get, like, TNA went from this like laughable cockroach that'll never die. Like, you just LOL TNA, shake your head at them, to where I really do think a lot of those same people like us are now rooting for them to succeed. They've got great
talent.
Oh, I'm
totally rooting for them.
Scott DeMore, like you said, it's fantastic.
I still record the show.
I should, because I have it. I have it on YouTube TV. I have unlimited DVR.
It is on my subscription list on my DVR.
But do you watch it?
Yes. Here's the thing, Greg. I am more inclined to watch Impact over my SmackDown or Raw recordings.
I get that. Like I said, if I watched one wrestling show a week, it would be NXT. Like, there's just that one show that people watch because it is different. Even though they've made a ton of changes to Raw and SmackDown, I still would watch. If I had to pick one, I would watch NXT. I just would.
And my number two is SmackDown. Like, I would watch SmackDown first. Yeah. Like, Raw, frankly, the tough thing for me with Raw is, this is terrible, I bowl on Monday nights, right? So I got to record Raw. So then I come home on Tuesday. I've got basically until 10-ish my time to get Raw under my belt. But in between that is, you know, being a dad, taking care of, you know, doing the family stuff. And then maybe I can Raw's DVR it and kind of get through stuff. But it's I'm almost always 3 to 4 days late on Raw. And by the time I get to the point where I can actually sit and consume Raw, because it's so long, commercial breaks notwithstanding, I have the gist of what happened and don't need to watch it. With SmackDown being on a Friday, and God knows where it'll be when the next contract comes up, the convenience of being able to start it on Saturday morning, same thing with Impact. Like, I can get up Saturday morning, watch that, and then go about my day.
I agree. It's and WWE has created that space too, where you don't have to watch their programming, and it's weird. Now that they've fully created a space where you don't have to watch their programming, they're doing better. It's just.
Right.
Because they know that the hardcores will tune in somehow, but the casuals are propping up all the TV and everything else. And plus they're selling tickets like crazy. I mean, it's just, but they don't, you know, you have to watch Impact or AEW to find out what the heck's going on there. You used to have to watch Being the Elite to know what was going on in AEW. But in WWE, like, you could literally just go on Twitter and figure out everything that happened that you need to know. You could go on probably TikTok. I'm not on it, but you could probably find everything on there too. Like, it's just everywhere what's going on. It's hard. It's really, really, really hard to say spoiler free, to stay spoiler free in this day and age for that reason. But yeah, you're exactly right. Like, it's that consuming, but I think it's great that you have Impact. That's like your can't miss, that I have NXT, that it's my can't miss. Like, I'm glad that there's those other programs. You brought up Scott DeMore, and I've said this before and I'll say it again. First of all, he got better when Don Callis left. Go figure. Like, more work piled on his plate, he got better. If they were to ever go south, I guarantee you he'd walk right into a job with WWE. Had phone calls from WWE and probably knows that he has that there.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. But
good for them. Good for everybody. Good for us. Go follow Patrick Down on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist, WrestlingRealist. Go follow me at GregDeMarco44. Follow the website, thechairshot.com, at Chairshot Media.
Thechairshot.com. Always use your head.
Listen to all of the great programs that we have. I listened to Bandwagon Nerds this week. And even though now that I don't have a commute, it's so much harder for me to listen to podcasts. I listen to next to nothing right now, but I found time to dial up Bandwagon Nerds. There was something that I wanted to ask you about. I can't remember it now whatsoever, but
it wasn't Tony casting a dead guy for
no,
because that was a highlight of the show.
It was a good show, to be honest with you. Like, it might have been something that happened during the trailer park. I just cannot remember whatsoever.
That's fair. So, well, if you remember it, you can ask me. Off show.
I will. Yeah, I might have to go back and re-listen to it. But yeah, I listened to almost the whole episode at this point. But
nice. I've gotten them to tighten it up pretty good. I thought you'd be proud of us.
Yeah, hour 39 minutes was this week's
episode. That's good for us.
It's very good. That's outstanding. That's almost how long this show is. Or this show is almost that long at this point this week. So, but go listen to that DWI podcast, so much more right here on the Chairshot Radio Network, which you can, of course, find at thechairshot.com. Already played that. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. Pick up one of those beautiful Chairshot t-shirts. You'll be glad you did. And so will we. As far as next time, who knows what the world of professional wrestling is going to bring us, but it always brings us something good. But that's enough talk. Let's have a little more action. We will see you next time on The Greg DeMarco Show.
A little less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more bite, a little less bark, a little less...
Acknowledge me.
You just made the list.
TheChairShot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.